Accession number 20620, Reel 2.
William Tichard, Reel 2. So did they teach you any codes to use, or...?
No. That was just a straightforward Morse code. If you had to use it, well, you could use it. But I think some road, very rare you used it. We used it, the Morse code. I think the main people in the artillery signal section that used the Morse code was, I think they were the clever ones. They were really clever, you know, that took to it. And they used to go with the officer. But see, I don't know if I'm rambling off course or not now, when they used to go forward with the infantry to find a place for forward OP, and they'd be down there then sending signals back, you know.
So you were using mostly radio or...
Radio off telephone, yeah.
Right. So they taught you Morse code, they taught you radio, what else did they teach you?
That was all, see, communications, as it says, radio, phone, Morse code.
Right.
That's your communications.
And what about the technical side? I mean, you know, apart from using the radio, did they teach you how they were made or mended or...
No.
And what about laying, you know...
The lines. Yeah, well, that's what I did mostly, was line laying, and enjoyed that, because everything, like, when you lay a line, you just lay it on top of the ground. You don't put it up like the post office do. You couldn't have time to do that. You just put it along the, wherever you was going, through fields, and just lay it on the ground. And when he came to a roadway, well, he couldn't just let it go across the road. He had to put two poles up, put it over the pole, and then carry on like that. And it was hard work, really hard work. You had to be on your toes. Yeah.
So on your signals training, that was basically what they taught you.
And
how long did that take?
That was in the 6 weeks. That was all in the 6 weeks, like radio, phone, and Morse code, and line laying, all came in with signals.
Yeah. And when you finished that, you went?
Then I went back to my unit, and then there was a signaller.
Which was where?
Went back to Sutton Valence, and then, as I say, when we first went to the unit, Sutton Valence, we'd come from the training, like, and there was the six of us, and when we got to the camp, I remember the camp was plain as a pikestaff. We was in this big orchard, and all mealy going on, you know. I thought, what's going on, like, you know? And the other sergeant major came, big fella he was, and he said, I know you a lot. So I said, well, we've been posted to this unit. Posted to this unit? What, this time? He said, I'm afraid we can't do anything for you. He said, we're off on a 2 weeks scheme. That was a Spartan, what they call a Spartan scheme, going away for 2 weeks. So they said, well, what we can do with you is send you home for a fortnight and then come back again after. So they sent us on a fortnight's leave. We went on a fortnight's leave and then we reported back to the unit. And then that's when we did his job then, training. All his training was down south, and they wanted a place down south where all over Kent,
right.
Surrey, Sussex, all over there.
That then, yeah. So at Sutton Valence, what was the camp like? Were you in tents?
No, nissy nuts. These metal nissy nuts. And there used to be about 20, again, about 20, 25 in each. Each disnut.
Do you remember your corporal or sergeant? Do you remember their names?
There was Mio, Sergeant Rimmer, As a matter of fact, this. Oh. Then we used to have the sergeant over the signals, over us, was an Irishman. Oh, can't think. Honestly, I can't just think of his name. But he was right Irish, he was.
Do you remember any of the officers?
Yeah, there was Williams. Then there was, as a matter of fact, this is off the board, like, but there's a major now in South Africa, living in South Africa, and he'd come down to my mate here at Shrewsbury to visit him. I never seen him after, like, and...
So was it a happy camp at Sutton
Lions, was it? Oh, well, in the army, them days, was. It was, everybody mucked in, everybody was happy, everybody was mates, you know, and... You couldn't afford to be miserable or anything like that. It was a happy life. One or two had the different little moans and groans, you know, but other than that, everybody got on with what they had to do. And
did you get off camp at all in your spare time?
Oh, yeah, we got off to camp and used to go into... I've been into Maidstone, I've been into Herne Bay, I've been to all them places... And as a matter of fact, we got stationed in Herne Bay.
We'll try and do this in chronological order.
Ah, I see what you mean.
You see what I mean? So when you first went to Sutton Balance and joined your company, what were you actually doing then? You were doing exercises, were you?
Well, we was, same as I say, used to go out on all these schemes, and that's where your experience came in then. As a signaller, you did your job, what you was taught to do. And, of course, you was a bit, how can I put it, you're a bit stale on it at first, but as each scheme went on, you went for a week, maybe a fortnight, well, you were doing your job for that fortnight, and it all came in, and it all gradually built up, till everything was done automatically.
Can you remember any of the other companies or regiments that were involved in these schemes?
Not really. Mostly it was big stuff like 5-5s, heavy regiments and all them big stuff. But we never came into contact them with much. Very little.
So, as a signaller, how were you getting your orders? You know, how did it work when you were on one of these schemes? Would you have a briefing beforehand?
Oh, yes. If he was going on a scheme and he'd come to the corporal or the bombardier or the sergeant, come say, right, now then, you'll be in the Toc 8 truck, what we call a Toc 8 truck. That was the line truck. See, they laid the lines. So I knew what my job was to be. Then they explain where we were going, the route and everything. So with that, then we had to lay the lines for the guns. See? First of all, we laid the lines from the command post to the guns, tannoys, what you call a tannoy system. See, they're the tannoy, and we put the lines to them. Then, from the command post, we had to lay this line to wherever the observation post planted the cells. Then we connected their phone up. Then we had to be on, like, a standby then for any breakages in the line, anything like that. And if any breakages came, then we had to go and find out where they were. And say, if you had 2 miles of line laid out, and it was broke somewhere, you had to walk that 2 miles to find it. And once you found it, then you reported in. You carried a phone with you. Then when you repaired it, you connected into the line, then rung back either old command post forward. Is your line all right? And then it was all right. Then if it wasn't, then you knew there's another break on. So you had to keep on going till you found it.
Considerable distances.
Oh, yeah. Oh, aye.
What was the longest you ever did?
Oh, I wouldn't like to say. In England, before the war, not a great distance, maybe a mile or something like that, because you had to keep the in perspective, like, you know, you couldn't have a command post here and then go and lay a line 10 miles away. That was ridiculous. You know, you had to do it within reason while you were just training to show you how to do it, see, and get used to doing it. But, as I say, during the war, it was a different kettle of fish altogether.
So who was in charge of you? I mean, explain to me how many there were of you working and, you know, who was next above you and so on.
Oh, well, you had a bombardier, or Lance Bombardier, it's one stripe, bombardier, two stripes, and a sergeant, and a sergeant major. Then you come up to your officers, captain, majors, and so on.
So what were you?
The sergeant was the mainstay of the section, the signal section. He was responsible for that section, no more than what the bombardiers were and that like. See, the sergeant passed down to the bombardiers what had to be done, and the bombardier passed it on to the Lance Bombardier, and then he passed it on to the signaller or whatever. And
so did you?
It was very, very interesting. Very, very interesting.
So did you become quite a team?
You had to be spot on, more or less, working with one another.
So how many signallers would you be working with?
Oh, well, on a line truck, you'd have your driver, maybe two, maybe three linemen, two, I think, and a driver. With command post, you just had your wireless operator, your phone operator. They'd be waiting for orders to pass out to whoever they was being passed out to, forward, OP or anything like that. That was their job, sat on the phone, answering it and sending orders out, same as the wireless operator. He did the same thing, sending orders out. And the operator at the other end, the forward command, the forward OP, well, they was, as I say, I don't want to go too far, you might not want that. They were given orders and then, and he was sent back and to the orders to one another. And as I say, that was your job, and we just had to wait around for anything to happen. And that's how you did your training.
So how long?
And when you weren't doing any training, you weren't out on any schemes, and you were back in your billets, you're still doing all your signal work, training. You had to be spot on, more or less. No ifs and buts or anything about that. You couldn't. You had to be specific what you said in everything you did. And you couldn't, if you messed up, well, the sergeant was down on you like a ton of brick, because communications was a big thing during the war.
So after your initial training, how long were you doing more training in England and exercises and so on before you?
Well, let me think now. December 42, right up to June 44. That'll be nearly 2 years, won't it? Well, that was all training.
And where were you stationed during?
Two solid years. I went to, as I say, Sutton Valent. I went to Rye. That was not far from the sea. That was.
What was it like there?
It was nice there. It was a nice place. Then, I mean, oh, I can't tell you all the places. Richmond, Herne Bay, Maidstone. All these places we went to, billeted for different places we were going to.
Were you always billeted in army camps, or were you?
No, in Herne Bay, we were billeted in civilian houses.
Right.
They evacuated them. And I remember, I can see it now, where we were billeted. Herne Hill, I don't know if you've heard it or not. At Herne Bay, it's Herne Hill, and it goes up like that. And we was right on the top, billeted in them.
Do you remember what sort of house was it?
Oh, big houses they were, posh houses.
Were they empty?
Yeah, they must have emptied them for us, you know. And then we used to go out there at night time, and we had some good times, you know.
Where did you go?
We used to go in the town, and well, I don't know if you want to know anything like this or not,
Oh,
but
yes,
my
please.
mate in Worcester, we were good pals, we were, me and. And he said to me, he said, "Do you want to go out, build town? It's got pictures." Because money, he had none. I think, I can't quite think, maybe about, I think it was 10 shilling a week he was on. Well, you had to send 7 and 6 in that home to your mother. And if they found out you wasn't sending that 7 and 6 home, you was in deep trouble again. Because that was a must. And what money he had left, nothing. And if you had barrack room damages, it was nothing again because you had to pay for them. Anyhow, he said to me, he said, "Right," he said, "do you want to go to the pictures?" "You want too bad." I said, "Yeah, we'll go to pictures, yeah." Anyhow, we got to the picture house in Herne Bay, and I remember the picture house as plain as a pikestaff. It went up these steps. So we stood at the bottom, and there was these two girls stood on top. No, this one, and a blonde, as plain as you could see she. So my mate said to me, he said, "Hey, look at that's nice up there." Because only 19. So he said, "Are you going up there?" He said, "See how you go on with her." I said, "No," I said, "you go up." So I said, "No," I said, "I'm not going." I said, "You got the face, you go up." And now I started up the steps, just got to the top of the steps, and this bombardier came out of the picture house and went to this blonde. And anyhow, I knew it was, so I came down the steps and I said to my mate, I said, "Good job I didn't try to chat her up." He said, "Why?" He said, "That was Smudger Smith's girlfriend." Called him Smudger Smith, he was a PT instructor. I said, "That's the PT instructor," I said, "Smudger Smith." I said, "Good job I didn't go and chat to her." I said, "I would have been in trouble." And anyhow, it all went by, you know. But we had some good
Yeah.
times,
Do you
you
remember some of the films you saw?
know. No, not really. The only one picture that ever stood out in my mind, that was when I was abroad, right, but you don't want to know that. But at home,
Yeah.
not really.
No.
We didn't really go to, really hadn't got the money to go to picture house. You hadn't got the money to go and have a drink, you know, if you wanted one, because you hadn't got any.
So some of the men had girlfriends locally then, or
Yeah, but not a lot really, because we was only 18 and a half, you know. And as I say, they had this, I think they had this idea that the war was coming up after Dunkirk, and it was always train, 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 train. I can't remember really going out a lot. Not a great lot, no.
Did you have a naffy in Herne Bay?
Oh, yeah.
What was that like?
That was all right. That was that's the only place you could afford really in time, you know, for seeing a bun. And that was it.
What sort of building was it in?
It was a fair building, prefab, but it was a fair building. And it was very nice, you know, you had your pool and your snooker and all that, you know, all your games, whatever. But we used to go in to talk, you know, just have a talk and natter amongst ourselves, you know, get to one and know one another better. And we really got friends. It was. Well, it was past friendship, it was comradeship at finish that got all this together. And as I say, I've said it before, I never ever regret going in the army because I met people and I learned a lot and everything else. I learned quite a lot while I was in the army, and it's all made for when I came home in Civvy Street.
Did you have an idea of what you were being prepared for? Because I mean, they trained you for nearly 2 years, didn't they? I mean, did you?
Well, not really, because you didn't even think that anything was going to come. We was only surmising that the big noises was thinking there was something coming up, and it was pushing us because they tried to get everything in what they could before anything happened, and you was pushed and pushed and pushed, your head was like that, sort of learning, trying to get everything in, you know, and at the same time trying to keep fit. Fitness was more or less the main basic thing, because if you wasn't fit, you was out.
What about the food?
Food wasn't too bad, not too bad. It all depended where you was when you went for your breakfast in the morning, porridge. If you was the last, then I'm afraid you could stand a knife up in it. She knows it.
But otherwise the food was reasonable.
Really, yeah, very good, yeah. Yeah.
So you felt you were being
didn't you no harm. We say if it was no good then you'd have been down, you know. You wouldn't have been fit, would you, to do these things.
So you felt you were being quite well looked after?
Yes, oh aye, yeah. Cleanliness and everything like that. Everything. Everything was cleanliness. And your diet, your food and everything else. Because they was training you, looking after you, for do a job that was coming up. You had to be anyway, for anything that was coming up, was otherwise, if you wasn't and you went into a war, you weren't prepared, that was it, you was finished.
What about, I mean, the relationships between the ranks? I mean,
pretty good, yeah, fairly good, yeah. But as I say, everybody had to be with one another. You had to mix, you had to mingle and get to know one another proper, and get to know how one another spoke, get one another's feelings, and one another's antics, or little things they did, and you get used to all them, and you're like a family at finish, just like a brother, like just like brothers when you finish, because you know them inside out.
So did you socialise?
As I say, the men in charge, the bombardiers and them sergeants, them, they had to be hard. They couldn't be soft. I'll say, out of training, or if they met you outside or in a naffy, it was different again. You was pals. They treated you like human beings. But when you was training, they had to be hard. They had to be. Otherwise, I say, you'd be in trouble.
So you did socialise together?
Oh, yeah. Not the officers, though.
Right.
Oh, no. Or the sergeant, major and sergeant. I think bombardier was just about your limit.
So the officers were kept very apart from
them? Oh, yeah. And say they had their own mess, didn't they? And same as the sergeant major and the sergeants, they had their own mess. But bombardiers, they didn't. They was like us. They had to go where we went, naffies or whatever. They didn't have a special place.
About you know the generals who were running this war, you know, which were.
Well, you didn't come in contact really with them, did you?
Just heard about them,
you know. It's the same as when you got about Montgomery. Some said he was this, some said he was that, you know. But at the same time, what he did was a good job, and that you couldn't say anything else. Mm-hmm. They did a good job.
So.
I'll say the only thing was, I don't want him speaking out of line, but you always get the other rank saying, yeah, they're giving the orders at the back, and he's standing at the back, but he's not coming up the front where it's happening, you know. It's just a speech, matter of speech, you know. But otherwise, there was nothing really or bad against them, you know. They had a job to do more than anybody else.
So were you pleased when you found out Montgomery was going to be involved in your
troops? Oh, yeah.
You thought he was quite good then?
I never seen him, though. We never seen him. I don't know why. You see, of course, I think he visited a lot was these infantry divisions and that, you know. Artillery, I suppose he did that, but not very often. But he's more infantry, like, you know, because they were the bee's knees, they were the infantry. And yet they thought, supposed to have thought a lot about us, you know, because we had to help them and they helped us, you know.
Was there any bullying?
Never seen any.
No. Do you think the the officers or the NCOs bullied you at all?
No, no, not bully. No, just stressing what had to be done, which was correct.
They were fair, weren't they?
They were fair, but they was hard, which they had to be. You see, going off the tail, I see these things today on the television, and I think, really, it's rubbish sometimes. I think, you know, why all the shouting and all the swearing and one thing or another? It seems ridiculous. A man, a good man, who knew his job, didn't have to do that. Same as we had in our unit. They knew the job, did a good job, and they were drumming it into you because they knew that if you didn't, you was in trouble. It's had to be, that's got to be stressed. You're in trouble if you don't do what you're told and learn what you're told. You might as well keep out.
When did you first sort of hear about the Normandy landings? About the fact?
Well, we didn't hear about it, but we had a feeling because in the camp, I think we were kept in for about, I'm not sure whether it was 3 or 4 weeks, fastened in, weren't allowed out. And what was going on round about you with the guns and the vehicles were being greased. Everything was being greased, see, for when they went on board ship and when they landed.
So you knew something was
going
to happen?
Knew something was going on. And
you guessed where you were going then?
Pardon?
Did you guess where you were going then?
Yes, well, it had to be, Europe. And you know, you didn't really think about it. You know, you think, you know, going over there, you know, what's it going to be like, you know. But I can honestly say, without fear of contradiction, that I never, ever thought about being feared. Scared, yeah. A bit scared, yeah. But feared, no. I think twice, I was really, really frightened when I was abroad. Only twice. Otherwise, you just enjoyed yourself, get on with it, do what you've got to do, and don't think about it.
So how much notice did you get leaving Britain?
About a week, and we moved down to Kent, Tilsbury. That's where we went from. Tilsbury Docks, that's where we went from.
So you had about a week's notice?
About a week's notice.
And what date did you actually leave?
Well, I actually went, of course, the infantry, and they went first, naturally. They went D-Day, like. We went about D-plus 15 or 16 or something like that.
So you'd heard something about...
Oh, we knew what was going on, like, then.
Did they brief you about what was...
Oh, I did brief you what was happening then and what was going to happen and when we were, where we was going and all this, that and the other. And then when we knew we was ready for going, the pilots on board ship then and all down below, down in the decks.
Okay, we'll come on to that. William Titchard, end of reel 2.
Another one.